The astrologers among the priests of Horus, assisted by the Magus, consulted the calendars and set the date for the trial of the Red Road to be held on the day of the new moon of the god. Therefore, as Taita had remarked, Nefer had little time to prepare for the ideal. He withdrew from all his other duties, leaving even the conduct of the affairs of state to Taita and the council, while he gave all his attention to the first task required of him. Before a novice could present himself for trial, he must break and train his own team of horses to carry him on the Red Road. Nefer had to pick out a team of horses from the herd that they'd captured at Thane, then train them to the shaft of the chariot. He would have liked to ask Sokko to help him with the selection of his team. Not only was he a famous horseman, but he knew each of the captured animals. However, Sokko was one of only five Red Road warriors in Galala, and was one of those who would examine Nefer. He could not assist him in his preparations for the ordeal. There was another to whom Nefer could appeal. Taita's knowledge, understanding, and experience of horsemanship and chariot tactics exceeded even Sokko's. Yet Taita was not a Red Road warrior. His physical imperfections precluded him from the brotherhood. And added to that, he had religious scruples. He would never forswear Horus and the other gods of the pantheon to pledge himself to the mysterious red god of war, a god whose name was known only to his adepts. The two spent the first day on the hillside above the green fields where the unbroken horses grazed. They sat together and watched the animals below them, discussing those that caught the eye. Nefer pointed out a handsome white colt, but Taita shook his head. "A grey looks good in the traces, but I've always been wary of them. I've found they lack stamina and heart. Let us look for either black or bay, matched in colour." Nefer picked out a filly with a white blaze on her forehead, but again Taita shook his head. "The Bedouins say that a white mark is the touch of a devil or a jinn. I want not a trace of white on the animals we choose." "Do you believe what they say?" Taita shrugged. "A blaze or a sock mars their symmetry. You and your team should have the look of a pharaoh when you ride out." Taita and Nefer stayed on the hillside until nightfall, and went out again the next morning as soon as it was light enough to see the path, with Merin and three grooms. They began to sort the horses, driving any imperfect animal into the adjacent field. By noon they had whittled down the herd to 23 animals, all clean-limbed and strong, no scars, no blemish, no obvious impediment in their gait. There was not a single white hair on any of them. They let them settle down, and when the horses were grazing quietly, they sat in the grass and watched them. "I like that black colt," Nefer said. "He's lame. Almost certainly he has a cracked left front hoof." "It is not limp," Nefer protested. "Watch his left ear. He flicks it at every pace. Tell Merin to drive him out." A little later Nefer marked a black filly. "She has a fine head and bright eye." "She is too highly strung. The eye is more nervous than intelligent. She'll wilt in the din of battle. Merin can let her go." "What of the black colt with the long mane and tail?" "The tail disguises the fact that he's half a thumb's length short in the back." By late afternoon there were only six horses left in the field. In a pact of silence, they'd avoided speaking of one particular colt. He was too obviously the choice they must make. He was a marvellous beast, not too tall or heavy, well-proportioned, with strong legs and back. His neck was long, and his head noble. They watched him a while longer. At last the Magus spoke. "I can find no vice in him. There's a spark in his eye that comes from the fire in his heart. I will call him Krus," Nefer decided. "It's the Bedouin name for fire." "Yes, The name is important. I never knew a good horse with an ugly name. It is as if the gods are listening. Let Krus be your right-hander, but now you need a left-hander. Another colt? Knefer started, but Taita stopped him. No, we need a filly on the left. A feminine influence to keep Krus in check and steady him in the heat of the fight. A great heart to pull with him when the road is hard.
You've chosen already, haven't you?
Knefer said. And so have you. Taita nodded. We both know who she must be. Their eyes went back to the filly grazing placidly beside the main irrigation channel, a little separated from Krus and the rest of the herd. Almost as though she knew they were speaking about her, she raised her head and stared back at them, with large shining eyes behind thick lashes.
She is beautiful, Knefer murmured. I'd love to take her without having to put a rope on her.
Taita was silent, and after another minute, Knefer said impulsively,
I'm going to try.
He stood up and called to Merrin. Take the others out of the field. Leave only the bay filly. When Knefer and the filly had the field to themselves, he left the fence and moved casually in her direction, not going straight at her, but strolling obliquely across her front. As soon as she showed the first sign of agitation, he squatted down in the green grass and waited. She began feeding again, but all the while she was watching him from the corner of her eye. Knefer began to sing the monkey song softly, and she raised her head and looked at him again. He took out a durra cake from the pouch on his belt, and without standing up, offered it to her. She flared her nostrils and snuffled loudly.
Come, my darling.
She took an uncertain step towards him, and then stopped and threw up her head.
Sweetheart, he crooned. My lovely darling.
A step at a time she came in, then extended her neck to full stretch and sniffed noisily at the cake. Terrified by her own audacity, she jerked back and galloped away, making a wide circuit of the field.
She moves like the wind, Merrin called. Dov!
Knefer used the Bedouin word for the north wind, the soft, cool wind of the winter season.
Dov! That's her name.
Having shown him her feminine capriciousness, Dov circled back flirtatiously and came to him from the other side. This time she accepted his offering readily and drooled saliva as she crunched it up. She ran her velvet muzzle over his open palm searching for crumbs. When she found none, she reached for his pouch and bumped it so demandingly that she knocked Knefer over backwards. He scrambled up and fished out another cake. While she ate it, he touched her neck with the other hand. As though flies were crawling over her, she made her dark mahogany-coloured hide dance, but did not pull away. There was a tick in her ear-hole, and Knefer plucked it off, then crushed it between his fingernails, and offered the bloody fragments for her to smell. She shuddered with disgust, and rolled her eyes at the offensive odour, but allowed him to examine and fondle the other ear. When he left the field, she followed him like a dog to the fence. Then she hung her head over the rail and whickered after him.
I am consumed with jealousy.
Mintaka had watched the encounter from the temple roof.
Already she loves you almost as much as I do.
The next morning, Knefer came down to the field alone. Taita and Merrin were watching from the roof of the temple. This was something between Knefer and Dov. No others could interfere. Knefer whistled as he came down to the fence, and Dov threw up her head and galloped across the field to meet him. As soon as he reached her, she pushed her muzzle into his pouch. You're a typical woman, Nefer scolded her. You're interested only in the gifts I bring you. While she ate the cake, he fondled and caressed her until he could slip one arm around her neck. Then he walked her along the fence and back again, and she leant her shoulder against him. He fed her one more cake, and as she savoured it, he moved back along her left flank, stroking her and telling her how beautiful she was. Then, in one smooth movement, he swung up and straddled her back. She started under him, and he braced himself for her first wild plunge, but she stood trembling with her legs slightly splayed. Then she turned her head and stared at him, with such comical astonishment that he could not help laughing. "It's all right, my sweetling. This is what you were born to." She stamped her forefoot and snorted. "Come now," he said. "Are you not going to try to throw me off? Let's get this question settled at once." She reached back and sniffed his toe, as if she could not bring herself to believe the extraordinary solecism he'd committed against her dignity. She shuddered and stamped her hoof again, but she stood firm. "Come then," he said. "Let's try a canter." He touched her flanks with his heels, and she jumped with surprise, then walked forward. They went down the fence sedately, and he touched her again. She broke into a trot, then a gentle canter. Meryn was whooping and shouting from the temple roof, and the men and women working in the fields straightened up and watched with interest. "Now let's see you really move." Nefer slapped her lightly on the neck and urged her forward with a thrust of his hips. She stretched out and floated away. Her dainty hoofs seemed barely to touch the earth, like the gentle wind for which she'd been named. She ran so that the wind stung his eyes and the tears streamed over his temples and wet the dense tresses of his hair. Round and round the paddock they sped, while on the roof of the temple Mintaka clasped her hands and cried out with amazement. Beside her, Taita smiled distantly. "A royal pair," he said. "They'll be hard to catch on the red road."